Back to the eighth. Blessed are they that have not seen, yet have believed. John 20:29, old version. Moses showed the great infinite life, the oneness of all. But Jesus showed to us the one infinite life, individualized in mankind. And that the infinite eternal life of God was the same life in man. And this life, which is the life in you and me, is eternal. And that death cannot touch it. No trial or affliction or any outside force could ever affect it. I am in the Father, and the Father is in me. This is the tremendous truth we have to realize. When we realize this, our narrowness, our pettiness disappears. There are many people who live on pettiness, the small little things that do not count. These are the things that affect their minds. Well, their minds are small, limited. When you see the great vista of life, when you understand the great universe itself is one whole, when you look to the great myriads of stars in the heavens, where we are told there are 2,000 million millions of them visible to the physical eye, and that is but a fraction of the manifested universe. And even all the manifested universe is but a fraction within the infinite mind that fills boundless space. But when we also think that the same substance, the same life, the same energy that is in the furthest star, the same creativeness that created it, is within us as the only one creativeness behind all creation. We take in the larger view, the small pettiness of the self, the small petty thoughts dissolve away. And it's only when the individual sees the pettiness in their own minds and recognize the vastness of the universe in which we live, which is one whole, then we lose that stupidity, these antagonisms, these different creeds and dogmas that create separation between man and man. To live in the Father is freedom. To live in the self is confusion and misery. It was the mind of man, not aware of the eternal life, that feared violence and death. Yet Jesus found that man may think what he likes, but with all this thinking and fearing, he could not change the life or alter its course in the individual. For it is the Father himself who ever remains the same. And there can be no separation in the life in man from the Father, who is life himself. Thus, man can only live and think because of the life of God that is within him. So we see a wonderful truth here. I am in the Father, and the Father is in me. Here was a complete picture of a consciousness and awareness, totally different to the masses, because the masses could not understand him, nor can the masses understand even the words that we are saying at this moment. But you can understand, even with the modicum of understanding, it grows and grows and develops, so that more and more awareness of your own reality, of God, of that life which is never seen, yet it is the only power that makes the body move. Like electricity is the power that makes the dynamo fly, all the machinery move. Switch off the electricity and there is no movement. Life is that invisible, unknowable thing. Yet it is the thing that enables me to speak. It enables me to think. I think by it, I speak by it. The voice that you hear is created by it. How wonderful is this truth, but how few can understand. Therefore, to think of it, we make it relative. To know that it is, makes it a reality to you and me. But you have to find it out yourself. It is difficult to comprehend the great significance in this truth. But when you do become more and more aware of this imminent divine presence, you cease then to react to conditions in the outer. Immediately you become aware of your outer reactions and discern them for what they are. Then you will begin to realize the presence. And immediately you become aware of that divine presence, you cease to react to conditions in the outer. Your thoughts become pure. But can you enter into your own mind and examine your minds and see if you're reacting to things external to yourself, or are you finding that which is real within yourself? Is your mind caught up in all the relative and small, petty things? It is you for the discernment for yourselves. You do not fear these things as before. You are no longer living in ignorance, reacting to ignorance. You stand firmly in the omnipresence, with the presence of the omnipotence within, expressing the great omniscience, the great intelligence of the only one. Thus the surface movements do not affect you because you are aware of your own being. I am trying to show you, in a few minutes, a mind like the Master. Not that we can ever grasp the great significance of his mind, the mightiness of his mind, the greatness of his understanding, but we can get a glimpse of that mind. And by getting a glimpse of that mind, then we can say, my brother. With this understanding, you will see that all the frills and titles that man seeks after is the great illusion, and is the cause of craving, and craving is the cause of all our trouble. The world is trying to right itself through some form of government, by economic and other means. But this must also fail, Not until the world will accept the fundamental reality and translate it into daily living can there be peace and security which we seek. There is no system in the world that will do it. There is no system that can be invented that will do it. There is no government that will do it. There is no group that will do it. Because immediately you have a group try to run the country, you will find other groups up against them. At the present time, you have United Nations. I say myself that United Nations will fail eventually because it's a fundamental law. There is no understanding of the fundamental unity of human nature, of the human family. Therefore, there can be no unity where there is no understanding of unity, where there can be no realization of the hazards of separation, where they cannot see that they are all separated from one another by their ideas, their images, their beliefs. How can there ever be unity? Is it not so that every nation, every group, financial or otherwise, are antagonistic to each other? We see two great ideologies in the world today. One, democracy, and the other, communism. Various nations have amalgamated themselves on one side, while other nations have amalgamated themselves on the other side. Both are based upon a philosophy, and not the truth of the only one, which is the fundamental unity of all people. I hope that you can see this clearly. If you do not see this clearly, then you will be in confusion and in conflict in your own minds. Eventually there must be a great clash. Yes, that which is contrary to the truth must destroy itself. But the truth can never be destroyed. Then the life can never be destroyed. Then the human family will not be destroyed because that has its eternal roots in the Almighty. But we can destroy the world. We are the world. We have conditioned the world. We have conditioned ourselves. Not until we see this clearly, that you have conditioned yourselves. And by conditioning yourselves, you have conditioned the world. Then how are you to free yourselves and free the world? Only by understanding what you are doing. Jesus made a total dedication of his life to the aspiration of the discovery and embodiment of the divine truth, and nothing else. He did not divide his life between the divine and some outside aim or activity that had nothing to do with the search of the divine truth. He said, "I am not of this world. This world finds nothing in me. No possessiveness, no hate, no aggression, no death." So he pronounced that the devil, the father of lies, having no truth in him. The devil does not oppose God, as some stupid people tell you. How could the devil oppose God, I'd like to know, when God is infinite and omniscient and omnipotent and omnipresent? On one breath they will say something, and with the other breath they will deny it, because they are ignorant of the truth. We are but imitators. to believe what the other person says. I don't want you to believe what I say. I want you to think. By thinking, you will free yourselves. All to be infinite, God must be all that is. Therefore, the only thing that makes up the devil is the non-existence of the devil. And that non-existence of the devil becomes, in the mind of the individual, a reality. The non-existence of the devil becomes a reality in human mind. And then he believes that there is some power opposing God. The whole universe is moving forward and upward under a great and mighty mind. The cosmic mind that rules the very stars, that rules the insects on the ground. It rules the Father's Son, it rules this earth, which is but a grain of sand on the seashore or the panorama of worlds. This cosmic intelligence is the active principle in everything, moving in all one direction at the one time, perfectly in unison and in unity. One has thought. But his thoughts reel in comparison to this mighty thing that we see before us, the great cosmic creation in which we are playing that part. And the very creativeness that is in the heart of the universe is in your heart and in mine. And the very voice you hear speaking to you now is because of that creativeness, that cosmic reality. Can there be anything greater? Then you will say in your mind that there is a devil. Then you become stupid, narrow, and bigoted. Get the greater view of the mightiness of that invisible power that we look upon as electricity, in fact, is but a minor manifestation of it. No one has ever seen it. The electricity is not destroyed because the globe is broken. The electricity does not in any way be affected if the dynamo goes wrong. But this electricity is everywhere in the atmosphere. No one has ever seen it. By mere chance, a scientist is working with two particular discs, one flying one direction and one in the other. And he found by doing so, there was a form of energy created. And from that time, electricity was brought to us. Now we have it in life and in power. We found the laws of electricity and how it works. And within you and me is the law of life of how it works. I am the life. That is the healing power. Ensure that, firstly, that we are all human beings, having one Father, our Father in heaven. Our divine sonship being the eminent divine principle within each one, mostly hidden and deeply covered by beliefs, creeds, and separation. Yet this divine presence remains always ready to come forth when we discard all that is false and a hindrance to its true expression, making us one family, divine in nature. Jesus saw that he could not attach himself to any particular group because he was unlimited and universal. He saw that he was the Son of God, the only one, and all were his brethren, and he rebuked anything that caused separation among them. When we search in our own minds, we will see if there is any entanglement, anything that separates us from one another, then we can dissolve it through his wisdom and power, which becomes ours through understanding. Separation is the destroyer of brotherly love. To love one another is proof of our oneness, our unity. To hate is proof of our stupidity, our ignorance of this truth. It is when you see the beloved in your brother, that beloved in yourself, then you have found. This is the divine will and not a personal choice or the preference of the ego self. Jesus was aware that no mental theories had any fundamental importance. Mental theories meant nothing to him. Neither had beliefs or creeds, nor the imitation of another, for he knew that the mind forms and accepts theories that support the ego self, steeped in ignorance, superstition, and separation. And you will find this yourselves. Any theory that will support the ego self will be received with open arms. But any theory that dissolves the self away will be rejected, and that's why they rejected the Master Jesus. Because the ego self was the foundation of religion and separation. It was the foundation of dogmas and creeds. Therefore, he discarded them from the beginning. But most people are blind, because they were blind from the beginning. They never saw from the time they were born, because they were caught up in the religions of their parents and the beliefs of their parents. And not until such time as they stepped out of this imitation into freedom to think for themselves could they grasp that which was unity, the whole, completeness of everything. He realized that we are born in ignorance, born in separation, the great sin, born into a family that followed a certain dogma antagonistic to others. The child's mind being plastic accepts without thought and builds antagonism throughout life until he begins to think for himself. And here is the great thing. Get the child when he's young, when the mind is plastic, then plant in that mind a belief. Plant in that mind a theory. Plant in that mind an antagonism against another nationality. Build them up in the belief that they are a super nation, a super person, a super people. And then you're building the edifice of your own destruction. It has never been otherwise. Search back in history and you will see all this is a truth, that immediately you set up some division with a fundamental lie, and based upon a lie of superiority, then as sure as you're alive, you will crumble to the dust, for it is not accordance to that great, mighty, wonderful cosmic plan that we see in the heavens. We look beyond ourselves, and we find that in ourselves here is the very law that is taking place in the furthest planet, the very creativeness that is whirling suns and moons and stars in their orbit. The very creativeness within me and you. We are moving forward in this great cosmic plan as one whole. And don't forget it. That is the fundamental law upon which security and peace will be founded, and upon nothing else. Religion is fundamentally rooted in the human family. That is why it is such a strong hold on people throughout the world. It is only when we grasp the one fundamental religion of love, of the one united in the whole, are we set free from antagonism, fear, strife, and misery. Then love is the cure for all conditions. It was the love of God that Jesus portrayed in his words and actions while on earth, and his resurrection proved that the same eternal love of the Father was in the Son, showing the way we all will go. Fear not, for I am with you. On the evening of the resurrection day, two disciples of Jesus, Zacchaeus and Cleopas, of the village of Emmaus, 7 miles from Jerusalem, were on the way home, and they walked and talked about the things that had occurred. Jesus himself overtook them and walked beside them, but they did not recognize him. He said to them, "What is all this you are debating on your walk?" They stopped and looked downcast. Cleopas answered him, saying, "Are you alone, stranger, in Jerusalem, and know not what has happened there?" "What is that?" he said to them, and replied, "All about Jesus of Nazareth." We can imagine their minds, steeped in the things that had passed, the things that they had. The last week or so was a tremendous week for many people. This was a world event. It was part of the great cosmic plan, for the simple reason that here was the expression of the Almighty, showing the unlimited state of that life inherent in man, showing that life did not end in the grave, but that life that grew in mankind, that formed the body, the brain, the nervous system through which he could think and act, was life eternal. And although it had created the instrument for the time being, it was still the same life, the same consciousness that was manifesting in there. Was still conscious. And this was revealed to man through the Master. No other man has ever done what he did. I am showing you things that by knowing them in yourselves, you will find the truth in yourself. To God and all the people he was a prophet, strong in action and in utterance. But the high priests and our rulers delivered him to be sentenced to death and had him crucified. Our own hope would be that he would be a redeemer of Israel, and he is dead. In other words, our own people, because these were Jews, looked upon him as their redeemer, our only hope, but now he is dead. What a blow. Yet he was alive. The mind not understanding the truth, being limited in not knowing the truth, couldn't hold on to that life that is eternal, but only the seeming, flitting part of the human life upon earth. That's all the mind could grasp. And that is 3 days ago, they said, though some women of our number give us a surprise. We were at the tomb early in the morning and could not find his body. But they came to tell us that they'd actually seen a vision of angels and declared that he was alive. 2 of our company did go to the tomb and found things exactly as the women had said, but they did not see him. Jesus said to them, "O foolish men, with hearts so slow to believe after all the prophets had declared, had not the Christ to suffer thus and enter his glory?" Then he began with Moses and the prophets and interpreted to them the passages referring to himself throughout the scripture. Now they approached the village to which they were going. Jesus made as if he were going on, but they pressed him to stay with them. And as he lay at the table, he took the loaf and blessed it and broke it and handed it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, but he vanished from their sight. Here is quite a common thing that is known in the East, in the Himalayas. I could detail numbers of cases where people have appeared and talked and then vanished. I remember going to a cave in the Himalayas one special night with a number of the Himalayan masters who arranged this meeting. And as the moon began to rise, figures came in all directions. And they sat down, spoke, and then disappeared. One could believe somehow that they were mesmerized or feeling that they were seeing visions of some kind. But on several occasions I looked at my watch. I looked around and felt myself assured that I was really perfectly conscious. these things did happen. And it's convinced me more than ever, and I know it is true, that Jesus appeared to his disciples, that this story is true. Then they said to one another, did not our hearts glow within us when he was talking on the road, opening up the scriptures for us? So they got up and returned at that very hour to Jerusalem, where they found the 11 and their friends all gathered, who told them that the Lord had really risen and that he appeared to Simon. Then they related their own experiences on the road and how they had recognized him when he broke the loaf first. As they were speaking, Jesus stood among them and said to them, peace be unto you. It's so great and so wonderful when you know the truth, to know that it's true beyond the comprehension of petty things of the human existence. If I can raise your minds away from the petty things of the ordinary life into the realization of the truth that I am explaining to you now, you will never turn back. You never allow your minds then to be caught up in the things that are worthless, and the petty little things that enter into your mind, you will discard them. Even if they do come into your mind, you will know them for what they are. Peace be unto you. They were terrified, imagining that it was a ghost they saw, but he said to them, why are you upset? Why do doubts invade your mind? Look at my hands and feet. Tis I. Feel and see. A ghost has not flesh and bones, as you see I have. With these words he showed them his hands and feet. Even yet they could not believe him. For sheer joy they were lost in wonder. He said to them, have you any food here? And when they handed him a piece of broiled fish, he took and ate it in their presence. Now Mary and Martha, Ruth and Lazarus, were in their home, and they heard that Jesus had risen from the dead. Martha said, it cannot be, for such a thing has never happened since the world began. You never heard about it. It never happened. And it's the same with most of you. You never have never heard about it, so it never happened. Is that not so? Of course it is. You want to see too before you believe. Mary said, but did not the Master bring our brother from the dead? And surely he could bring himself to life again? And as they talked, the Master stood in their midst and said, I am risen from the dead. The Christ life does not die. Then Martha ran and brought the chair in which Jesus had ever loved to sit, and Jesus sat on the chair. For a long while they talked. Then Jesus said, fear not. I will be your boon companion all the way. And then disappeared. What a comforting thought. Of course, you know human mind. You know your own mind. How often would you seek to have that said to you in your times of doubt, in your times of fear, in your times when you think that you would lose something. It's only with you for a while. But now it is going to pass. It's going to go away from me. I'm going to lose it in a few minutes. And you get depressed. How wonderful it would be if you would hear the silent voice quietly saying to you, I will be your boon companion all the way. But then you disappear. They said in the ancient script that Jesus also appeared to the Eastern sages. He also appeared to the scribes and Pharisees in the temple in Jerusalem in a fisherman's garb and asked, what has become of Jesus who is called the Christ? Is he not teaching in the temple now? They replied, that man was crucified a week ago. His body buried in a tomb. But his followers came by night and stole the body. Jesus said, I will testify that his body was not stolen from the tomb. Man from Galilee has risen from the dead, as he said he would. Then the priests and scribes rushed to seize the man. But instantly he became a radiant power of light. And the priests, scribes, and Pharisees fell back in deadly fear. They saw the man from Galilee. The man with power only through deep and complete understanding of his oneness. I am in the Father, and the Father is in me. And when you have seen me, you have seen the Father. The deeds that I do are the deeds of the Father, whoever remaineth within me. Just he is performing his own deeds. The self has disappeared, and God has taken his. As soon as the self in you shall disappear also, so shall the God take its place. Jesus looked upon these frightened men and said, I am he whom you stoned at the city's gates and crucified on Calvary. Behold my hands and feet and see the wounds the soldier made. I came to earth to demonstrate the resurrection of the dead, the transmutation from the human to the divine. Then Jesus raised his hands in the similar sign, the thumb and two forefingers, and said, peace to every one of you, goodwill to all men. Then he disappeared. How astounding. Still how true. Now Thomas had not seen the Lord since he had risen from the dead. And when the 10 said that they had seen him and talked with him, Thomas said, until I see the nail prints in his hands and feet, the spear wound in his side, and talked with him as I have talked with him before, I will not believe that he has risen from the dead. It was in Simon's house in Bethany the disciples met. It was the evening of the first day of the week, just 8 days from the time Jesus rose from the dead. And on the morrow, all the disciples would turn their faces towards their homes in Galilee. As we will see in the following epistle, as Jesus had told them then to go to Galilee, and there he would meet them. For his ascension. First of all, we see Jesus in all name, scourged, crucified, risen from the dead, and the ascension. All the same things that take place in you and me, except in the minor fall. The 11 apostles were there, the door was closed and barred for fear of the Jews. Then Jesus passed through the closed door and appeared in their midst. And he said, "Peace be with you." And he said to Thomas, "Look at my hands, put your finger here and your hand into my side, and talk with me as you have often talked with me." Thomas answered and said, "My Lord, my God." He recognized truth there. Jesus said to him, "You believe because you have seen me. Blessed are those who believe though they have never seen me." Disciples were now established in their faith of the living Christ. Here was a handful of men, disciples, who were all sixes and sevens, one believing, one half believing, other disbelieving. But the whole story shows the complete of that wonderful thing, bringing together the disciples so that they would have the complete faith in the living Christ that is born in every human soul. That is the createdness within you and me. That Christ is not yesterday or tomorrow. We don't think of him then as in the past, or think that we might meet him in the future, but think of him now as the ever-present life, the eternal Son of God, not separated from us in any way whatsoever. So therefore we know that at this very moment Christ lives amongst us. Jesus showed himself again to his disciples at the Sea of Tiberias, and we will see in our next lesson all truth, wonderful words he gave to them of love. That is the secret of it all. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved. Blessed are they that have not seen, yet have believed. Benediction. O dearly beloved, thy spirit lightens my heart, thy presence and eternal joy. Thou art alive forever, thou art just behind my prayer. Thy presence pierces the veil of my thought, yet at times thou seems so far away. I want to hear thee speak to me in that silent voice I know so well. Thou art my